Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny BT. And we're going to have a chat with another Scotland scrum half, Ben White, shortly after he swapped the premiership for the top 14 this season to find out how life in Toulon is panning out, amongst other things. But it's all kicking off in French rugby, Johnny, this week, again. As if it's ever anything different. We've got loads to talk about. And how are you as well? It's a special day today, isn't it? You're relaxing? You're off on a big night out later?
A big night, mate. No,
it's your
big
birthday.
Nights out. But it's not just my birthday. So our third, Finn, is a birthday twin. So we share birthdays. So it's my 38th and it's his third. So I'm all teed up for Paw Patrol birthday cakes.
That's just for you, yeah?
Just for me, exactly. Jen's pulled out all the stops. The Paw Patrol birthday cake is on its way just for me. I don't know what Finn's getting, actually. It's a good point you make. But, mate, looking forward to celebrating with him after school. And no, it's a quiet day to the grindstone, mate. World Rugby day job, still in the sort of hangover from the Rugby World Cup. But as you mentioned, all kicking off in the top 14. So looking forward to getting to that before we chat to Ben.
It is all kicking off. I mean, we chatted last week about the potential for a little bit more change, potentially, at Montpellier with Antoine Batut coming in. Lo and behold, a lot more change.
It ain't just Antoine.
Cock is gone. Elisalde gone. Colazzo, we were just talking about leaving Brive. He's in. Vincent Achete, you know him, he's in. Christian Labitte is in. But the headline is obviously Bernard Laporte, who was handed a 2-year suspended prison sentence last December. And he was suspended as well from holding any position in French rugby, but he has appealed, which means he can take up another role, I guess, and he's in as well.
You know what is hilarious about that?
Hmm.
Is that what you just mentioned hasn't even been mentioned at all in the press over here in France.
Really?
Not at all. It's a sporting thing. It's a guy with a passion for rugby and a winning CV. And they haven't even mentioned the fact that there's scandal, and actually it was between Altrad and Laporte and the FFR. That's how this has all come about. But actually now he's employing him full-time to come be the sporting director or the director of rugby at Montpellier.
Well, we're going to mention it. So,
well, there you go. I mean, it is what it is. And technically he is allowed to take the position, but it's bizarre as it is done. And I mean, thoughts initially, like you have to think for Cockers, for Richard Cockerell, like 7 games into the new role, gone. And then the boys that you mentioned, so Echeto was my head coach and backs coach at Bayonne. Christian Labitte, former Toulouse back rower, was coach of Carcassonne for a long time. And what those guys are known for is energy, fun. They are upbeat. They are positive people that know how to lead a group. And they'll come in and they'll inject that straight away. Antoine Batut, who I played with at Bayonne, is a very technical, calm character. I mean, he also had a court case. He got sacked by Bayonne because he knocked out a nurse or something down in Bayonne, apparently, allegedly. And he's going through that court case as well. So totally out of character for him. But that's it. It's a staff that's been patched together. Colazzo, who left Brive last week, he's been replaced by Bronken. Musical chairs. But what they're looking for, they talk about all the time in France, is an electroshock, like something to give, like get the defib pack on the club, get everyone back together, feeling good with a different clean message and start again. Because like Altrad's come out and spoken about it this week, like they've got far too good a playing staff to be where they are, to be last in the top 14. You saw tears from the players after that loss last weekend in the sort of derby against Perpignan. So he's had to do something. Amidst all that, you have Ugo Mola coming out last night and saying, pleading with top 14 coaches to, sorry, with top 14 presidents to be more patient. He's like, this musical chairs and the volatility that we have can't go on, but it's happened again. So four new coaches coming in, Laporte coming in, which would be seen as scandal widely, but isn't reported here at all. It's just Bernie's back and he's in for the top job and he's going to do a job. So that's how it's been reported here in France.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not a good look for the rest of the world because we all know about that. And more than anything, that's suspended for the time being because of his appeal. But if his appeal isn't successful, presumably
he has to leave. But what's incredible as well is how, I don't know, like I'm half French, right? So, But I just don't understand how it's not reported on.
Yeah.
It's incredible. But look, he's there for a reason. He does have a fantastic sporting history of success with, you know, going all the way back to Bordeaux, Stade Francais, Toulon, the French team as well. The game has evolved and changed. And when he was at Toulon, he had the biggest bunch of barbarians that rugby has ever seen on the club circuit. So I don't see this being an easy task either. But that's it. He's got Colazo, Echeto, Labitte and Antoine Batut to come in and try and restart this club as quickly as possible because they are floundering at the bottom of the top 14.
And what is going on with Rafael Ibanez? Because there were reports that he was moving on to a different role within the FFR. Then the FFR announced that he's still team manager, but there's a lot of blurb that came with it that sort of suggests his role is changing. Has there been a fallout with Fabien Galthié or not?
Well, no, there's a lot of kind of crap report. Like it was all clickbait that came out of, you know, leaving. And but as far as it's been reported here, he's just taking on more of a role with the FFR, which would be a bit more of a stretch for him. So he's taking on more responsibility because he's done a good job in that sort of communication management role with the French team. So I don't think he's leaving his role. I think he's continuing and just taking more on, or maybe he has a more varied function. But yeah, a lot of the sort of clickbaity press reports where Ibanez to leave, doesn't want to be in his role anymore. But I think he's just taking on a larger, more rounded role while still being there as part of the French setup.
Yeah, there have been some reports that his brother-in-law, even as his brother-in-law, Fabien Dort, had made comments against Fabien Galthié. He'd been annoyed by that. But like you say, it could be just media reports. We don't know.
It's the same, like today, the regurgitating quotes that Vincent Echeto made against Bernard Laporte in 2019. Like, rugby's a small world and there are relationships that are, especially when you're pitted against each other, all become funny when you have to then get into the same room and work together for the best of a club. So whether it's Rafa and Fabien, Echeto and Laporte, like these things are going to happen.
And one other piece of musical chairs, obviously we chatted a bit about Melvin Jaminet last week. His move has been confirmed. And obviously we know Antoine Dupont is going to play in the sevens. So we mentioned Toulouse would have a bit of cash sloshing about and they may be spending it on Louis Carbonell from Montpellier.
Well, it looks like they've got a check for 500K, which is a decent bit of business for Melvin Jaminet. But the reason Carbonell left Toulon in the first instance was there was a big clash with Colazo. And he was part of the playing group that went to the Prem president and said, look, this can't go on. And he was removed. Colazo now coming to Montpellier, which is where Carbonell is. There's obviously a big clash of personalities. I've just said that personalities can work together. But when it's staff to player, it's different, right? So Louis Carbonell also wants out of Montpellier. Garbisi is probably nailed down as the first choice 10 there anyway. Yeah. And Toulouse are looking for a 10. They had Antoine Dupont playing standoff at the weekend against Cast. So they have to find somebody for the rest of this year because with Ntamack out injured, they don't have much depth in the 10 jersey. So Toulouse have sort of voiced an interest. They'd love to take on Louis Carbonell, but they're going to get a backlash from Toulon fans. They've actually got a petition going. Carbonell and Jaminet played together in the youth section, like all the way down to like 4, 5, 6 years old. And they were devastated when he left. So they want to get Jaminet and Carbonell back together. So those are the sort of tug of wars that are going on at the minute. But Toulouse desperately needs somebody because they don't have any real leading 10 at the minute. And it seems like Carbonell is going to be that man.
Right. We'll have a chat with Ben White in just a minute. And we'll talk about some more of the top 14 action on and off the pitch later on. But first, let's find out what your meter moment of the week is, Johnny.
It's Toulon, mate. Again, there's a bit of a theme. Last week it was Tyler, it was Cast. This week, Ben's on, it's Toulon. Coincidence. Huge performance. And again, question marks have been asked about them, their consistency away from home, quality performance. They were insane. Huge away performance against Clermont. What a game that was, by the way. Like back and forth, mega running rugby. Both sides playing positively. It finished 30-27, three tries apiece. Clermont had a real chance to win it in injury time, but they just coughed up the ball in the fifth minute of injury time. But it was actually a youngster from Toulon. It wasn't Toulon. It wasn't Alan Wynne-Jones. It wasn't the old school. It was somebody probably you've never heard of. Jules Coulon, 21-year-old, normally with the youth team in the S-Bars, but he was insane, mate. 10 carries, 10 tackles, two tries, something like four tackle breaks, three line breaks, and he was just everywhere. So there's one to watch for the future, the rest of the season. I reckon he'll go to get more and more game time. Six Nations, Charles Olivon being away, playing on the French side. Jules Coulon, a name to watch for the future, and he was phenomenal at the weekend in Clermont. Huge win for them.
That was Johnny's meter moment of the week, and meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full-price item at meter.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We will chat a bit more about the action on the pitch in the top 14 shortly, but we can have a chat with another Scot now, Johnny, and one who's just settling into life in the top 14, Toulon scrum half, Ben White joins us. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm really well, guys. How are you? You well?
Johnny's very excited to get off to his Paw Patrol birthday cake shortly, but we'll focus on you first. You played a handful of games now, so you're kind of settling in after the World Cup. So how's it going?
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving my time, to be honest. No, it was great just to dive straight in after the World Cup, to come here and to get going, get playing, really. I've really enjoyed my sort of start to the Toulon experience as such. No, it's been great.
And you signed quite early in the summer. So did you get a chance to get something set up before the World Cup training camps?
Well, it all happened so fast. But obviously, with what happened at London Irish, and then as soon as this came about, sort of maybe a month or so, a couple of weeks after the news, and then so we were in training up in the Orium, just outside of Edinburgh, for most of the pre-season. So I was actually there when sort of the talk sort of started. And had some Zoom calls with Pierre and Laurent and people at the club. And then luckily we actually, because our training base for the World Cup was in Nice. So during one of the days in Nice, I managed to pop down across the Toulon and to actually have a look around the training ground and get to meet Pierre and meet Laurent and some of the other staff. And yeah, they sort of talked to me about their vision of the club and things and how they wanted to play. And yeah, it sort of went from there. Yeah, it's pretty cool when a club like that comes and says that they're interested in signing. You're like, right, okay, that's quite cool. Yeah, don't let this slip.
And it might sound like an obvious question, given you're in Toulon among the chateaus, the port, the wonderful scenery around there. I'm guessing you had other offers from maybe within the Premiership or going back to Scotland or elsewhere. What was it about Toulon that appealed most?
Yeah, no, I think, to be honest, it was more like, obviously in the top 14 and in France, like a lot of the plays around the scrum half, like a lot of the plays from line out around scrum half, a lot of the attack in the 22 and just general phase play is off the scrum half as well. So for me, that's probably slightly different to at times in England and things, which was something that interested me. And, you know, I think like over the years, the scrum halves in France has been a massive position for them, and they're perceived to be some of the best nines in the world. So for me, it was to be able to sort of train and play and be coached by a scrum half also. I thought that was a huge opportunity for me to get better as an individual. And also, you know, the squad this team, this club has, the squad that they have, the coaches they have, the infrastructure they have. I mean, the fans, it's like the, you know, there's no excuse here not to do well. Like, it's the perfect package. So, yeah, for me, as soon as I sort of knew there was potential, I was like, right, I'm all in on this now. I think Pierre, having played scrum half, spending time with him and understanding how he wants me to play and the way he wants the team to play and things has been really good for me. And I've learned a lot in the couple of weeks that I've just been there.
Mate, it's interesting to hear the passion in your voice as well. When you first said top 14, it's obviously a podcast, but your eyes completely lit up talking about it. So is this something that potentially moved to France? It was forced because of what happened to London Irish. But hearing the way you talk about scrum halves, how they're regarded, the fans and the frenzied nature of it over here, is it something that you always had one eye on that you'd maybe love to try in the future?
Yeah. It was always something that I wanted to do, but I never knew if it would become an opportunity, really. If it didn't happen with London, if London Irish didn't go under, who knows if I ever would have had this opportunity in terms of timings and things, because that's, you know what it's like. It's most of it is to do with timings. I think having played a couple of games and things, the atmosphere in the top 14s and the spectacle around games is second to none. Like it is amazing. It's like it's like test matches. Like, you know, when you pull up to the Stade Mayol, we have hundreds of people that line you into the stadium. The drums are playing, the flares are going off, and you're like, wow, this is cool. And it's every week. You know, we were away at Claremont last week, and again, you know, the fans, the atmosphere, the drums, the whole spectacle of the events here are amazing. And that's what you want to be playing in. You want to be playing in games every week where it's like, you know, this is a huge match, this is a huge opportunity for the club. And that's what's exciting as a player, isn't it? You know, you want to be playing against the best opposition every week, and that's how you get better.
Let's talk about that game at Claremont at the weekend then, because it was a spectacle for another reason as well. What was it like to play in Alan Wynne-Jones' final game as a professional? Because he got some ovation, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and rightly so, to be honest. Obviously, I'd never met Alan Wynne before going to Toulon. I think I might have played against him once or twice, but not much. And actually, he's, you know, one of the nicest blokes you meet. I know it's a very generic thing to say, and most people in rugby are good blokes, but no, he was a great man, a great professional. And it was pretty cool to get to play in that and to witness that. And, you know, the club let him be captain as well. And he spoke well, tried his bit in French, which was quite funny. He did well, and yeah, it was amazing. And I think, you know, it shows the person who he is and how big he was within the game, when the whole Claremont crowd as well was clapping him off. And you know, it was great to also get a win for him in his last game.
Mate, what I find incredible is he's 38, right? So I've only just turned 38 today. So Alan Wynne-Jones, like, having played against him as well, I'm retired 4 years.
Yeah.
So he's played 100, how many tests he's had, but. Like, I wanted to ask you, Alan Wynne-Jones, the impact has been so broad and so well felt even in French rugby. He's been here a very short period. But what little bits did you or the others around you notice about the way he goes about his business or the way he carries himself that maybe maybe the reason why he's been appreciated so much in such a short time at Toulon?
You know, I guess if you'd have watched training last week and you'd have seen how he was around the facility, you saw how he was on the training pitch, you saw how hard he was training, you wouldn't have thought he was retiring at the weekend. Like, even, you know, boys were saying, they were like, he could probably play another couple of years, to be honest. I think the way he reads the game, things, obviously his line-out expertise is second to none. But the skills he has, you know, he's actually got really good skills, to be fair to him. And yeah, look, he's just a great person to have around the team because of the energy he has and you know, the character that he is. So I think he enjoyed his spell there, even though it was short. And I know that all the players really enjoyed having him in the squad. And obviously, you know, having somebody like that with the experience he has and, you know, on your team is you definitely feel more confident going into a game for sure.
Another experienced Welshman, I know he got injured a couple of weeks ago, but Dan Bigger, has he been helping settle you in? And what's he been like to play alongside in the halfbacks?
I have to say, his French is really good. It's not bad. Obviously, I've played with Finn as well, and Finn's French is really, really, like, his is really good. He's even got the accent and stuff nailed down, which is quite impressive. So, no, I mean, he's obviously helped just sort of having a fly half that can obviously speak French and English in terms of calling of plays and just little things like that. It's been great because it does help you, obviously, at the start when I'm having lessons every week and you try and get out and speak as much as you can on the pitch and, you know, things, but it is difficult in the heat of the battle when, you know, because people start speaking more French and they don't have time to speak to you in English when they're obviously in the middle of the game. So, you know, you definitely have to pull more on, you know, the people who can speak French and English. Sometimes if you're not happy with something, speak to them and then they can translate into French or, you know, whilst I'm still trying to learn the language. I wish I could just be able to split and speak French, but no, he's a great player again. Somebody who speaks very well, he leads very well, and he's obviously a key player within this team, and he definitely affects the way we play. So I only ended up playing about 6 minutes with him before he did his back, but which was a nightmare for him. But no, he's I think hopefully he won't be out for too much. Well, I don't know, but hopefully he's not out for too much longer.
I was going to say he must be regretting being able to speak French now because he'll be getting shit from both the Frenchies and the foreigners for doing his back so early. So like, how much abuse has he caught? Because social media went absolutely everywhere. So I'm assuming the boys gave him a little bit behind the scenes as well.
A little bit, but everyone was a bit. Obviously, when somebody goes down like that, you're like, oh my God, that looks quite bad. Yeah. And I was actually rooming with him. And obviously we had a big bus trip to Perpignan and he was like, oh, my back is quite sore. And I was like, oh, hopefully you'll be all right. And then he went down and I was like, oh no. So I think everyone was a bit obviously worried at first, but yeah, I'm sure people did give him a bit of stick over it. But no, he's hopefully back fit in a couple of weeks.
It was the bus trip and the poor beds in the hotel room that did it.
Yeah, I have to say the bus trips, that they're something to get used to. Oh my God.
And as you get older, the back doesn't get any easier. I'm telling you now.
Oh, I mean, these buses are unbelievable. You know, they've got nice leather seats, they recline, but it's still a bus and it's still 8 hours. It's a long old way. Obviously, we bust the Clermont at the weekend, and the other away trip was Perpignan. So Perpignan wasn't. I think that was about, I don't know, four or five, something like that. And I think Clermont with a stop and things is more like.
And that's
seven.
Like your local rival. Your derby game is Perpignan, which is a big bus trip. Like, so when you come over to Bayonne, when you come over to Toulouse, like, because you're in a corner, like, everything's long.
The boys say Clermont and Toulouse are the worst bus trips for length, and I think Bayonne we might fly. I think some of them sometimes we fly. I think, but they were all like, "Oh, it's the bus." They were like, "No," I was like, "Why is it? How far?" I was like, "Is it that bad?" And then I can confirm, yeah, it's that bad. When you get back, it's the worst after the game because you get back at like 4 a.m. The next day, Sunday's a write off because you're just knackered. So,
and you mentioned the French there, obviously, with what you said earlier on about scrum half being such a pivotal position. Obviously, it's a pivotal position in England and Scotland and elsewhere, but in France in particular, is that something that obviously you've tried to learn a bit of French before you went over there? You're still doing it now, having lessons, and are you already seeing the kind of communication levels from nines in France is arguably more because of their role?
Yeah, maybe a little bit at times. I find, you know, I've had to be sort of really patient and calm at times, just because you know, if there's obviously at Toulon, there's a lot of people who speak English, so it's not too bad, you know. There are enough players, and people like Teddy also speak French and English. So there's quite a few. Baptiste speaks French and English. So there's enough players in the squad for you to be able to, you know, if I'm not happy, like Pierre said to me, he was like, look, if you're not happy with something, something's not going right, just speak in English, and there'll be enough people there who'll understand and they'll get the gist of it. So the main thing is just to talk and be really clear with your communication and try in French, but if you can't, just do it in English, and then we get the point across. I think that was probably like maybe my first game against Oyena. Maybe I just was a bit quiet at times when I probably should have taught more, because you're like, oh, should I speak in French? Should I try and say it? Like, how do I say that? You know, and that, when actually you're just best just to communicate, crack on. And luckily at Toulon, there are a lot of people who speak English. So it's not too bad, you know. And again, Pierre's English is reasonably good. Andrea Masso's English is good. So, and Sergio speaks English as well. So, you know, it's actually not too bad. So if there's things in meetings, all the meetings are in French, but if there's some certain things that they need to direct at me or in certain areas, they can speak to me in English as well. But I'm slowly picking understanding the rugby side of French more. But yeah, speaking is typical.
If you're a forward, you get a placage with Ben's role. He's got a bit more than that.
No, but the beauty is, mate, it's technical French. Like, once you know that a Chandelle is like an up and under, or you have your code for like whatever a box kick from nine is, like rugby language is just rugby language. It's technical. It's the same anywhere, but you just have your code words for defense or the way you're coming up. And it's all the same. Yeah, so once you've got those down and you can get first names down, then you're sweet.
Yeah, like you say, obviously you've got all of our calls, and whether that's in French or English, it's basically just a code word for something else. So as long as you know what the word is and what it means in terms of the action, then you 90% of the time you're good. It's just the bits of little chat, you know. But no, I'm enjoying having to learn something new, you know, and a new challenge. It's exciting.
But it's an incredible challenge. And again, you talked on like some of the names. That's the beauty of Toulon, like your Dan Biggers, your Baptiste Sarans, and what a competition that is as well. There's a boy who he'll also be feeling, right, well, Antoine Dupont is not going to be there for the Six Nations. So there's another spot up for grabs. So you'll be tilting for Scotland, he'll be tilting for France. But like the challenge between you to battle out for game time, make the nine jersey yourselves. And the beauty of France is you can't play all the games because it's such a marathon. The competition is so long. You'll get to share game time as well. So what has it been like? You mentioned little language bits, but learning little tidbits and playing with a guy like Baptiste Sarans as well, who's an absolute vet in the top 14.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a fantastic scrum half. And he's very, you know, he's very skillful. I think certain things that he looks for within the game is probably different to what, you know, I've looked for in the past or what I've been taught in the past. It's slightly different. So, no, it's been definitely good playing and training with him. And yeah, it's obviously good competition, isn't it? You know, if you're competing against one of the best nines in the world every day, you've got to be on it every day. Otherwise, he'll make you look a lot worse. So you have to make sure, like, I have to know all my roles. I have to know everything. I have to be playing well. And I think also something that, you know, that they do really well is that, you know, they're not afraid to try things and to be creative and, you know, little attacking kicks or offloads and things. And that's something that I'm going to, you know, try and add to my game and practice and hopefully can bring into matches as well.
Like, I almost think that sometimes, like, as Brits, is quite, you know, calculated, low risk. You would always go for a box and you know, there'd be like a system you'd stay within as opposed to maybe looking for something else or trying to find space with a creative kick or trying to draw somebody in and then get the ball away. So like, what is it about our upbringings, do you think, that makes French rugby a little bit looser and allows them to look for those things? Whereas as Brits, we're maybe instinctively maybe more team-based and structured, if that makes sense.
I think they're obviously very skillful here. They practice a wide variety of passes and kicks and they do them regularly, you know, in training. You know, some of the things you see are, oh my God, wow, like that's an incredible offload or an amazing pass or like that chip kick or things that necessarily people, you know, feel pressured to do. Obviously, you know, if it's, I don't know, if the kick's charged down or it's the pass is intercepted and, you know, the negative outcome, that the pressure that can put on the team. But I think, you know, here there's like, for example, for one of the tries at the weekend, like the crossfield kick that Baptiste did for Jules to score in the corner.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so that was like that was one of our plays for the week, you know, looking at that space and again, so get to the 15, drag the fullback across, and there should be an option for the 9 to kick straight, because again, the 9's the first point from, if you go one pass, it gives people time to recover and things. So actually, you know, to go to that space from the 9, from a crossfield, from the far 15, you know, some would say is a risky play because of the distance it is, but actually, you know, they looked at that and we practiced it in the week and he executed and we obviously scored. So I think, you know, they're not afraid to come up with plays like that that are, you know, around the scrum half and things, which necessarily maybe in England stuff would be more off the fly half, which is a bit, you know, it's a bit different, but it's good. And obviously, you know, you have to have the skill to do it, and he nailed the kick at the weekend. So, you know, it's things like that are new to me in practicing those different types of kicks and things and passes. But yeah, I'm really enjoying just adapting and learning new things and seeing the way that people play.
I'm sure Johnny is desperate to talk to you about Scotland as well, but you mentioned it's been a complete whirlwind ending up in Toulon, and it obviously happened very quickly. But we should touch briefly on what happened with London Irish. We had Paolo Adogwe on the show shortly after Wasps went under, and he ended up in Stade Francais. It was really interesting hearing about kind of the lines of communication, exactly what unfolded. So for you personally, obviously it's worked out well, and for others it hasn't worked out so well, but because it happened sort of just after the end of last season officially, how did you hear about it and how was it for you personally?
Yeah, obviously, like you say, you kind of just chuck your whole life's chucked up in the air. Obviously, as rugby players, you become very routine, you know. This is what you do on Monday, this is what you do on Tuesday, this is what you do. You go into your club, then you play Saturday, and you know, you kind of know what you're doing every day. And then for almost it was just to be like, bang, none of you have got contracts, you're all, you know, go find jobs. It's like, right, okay. You know, it's very hard for people who've been at the club for a long, long time. They've come through the academy there as players. They've turned pro there as players. And then it's, you know, you've also got that emotional side that's different to someone like me who came there and had only been there for 2 years. You obviously have an emotional connection with the club, but it's not as deep-rooted as some others. So, and, you know, it's the staff as well. Like the staff that have been there for years and years and years and years and years. And then, you know, again, they're in the same boat as us. You know, we were having Zoom calls as a whole, you know, London Irish entity as such, and there's, you know, staff on there who are losing their jobs. You know, we had people, you know, husband and wife at the club who've lost their jobs, who've lost both incomes, and it's like, right, well, off you go. You're like, you've got nothing here. It's incredibly brutal, and it's all, you know, it's sad, but you know, ultimately, It's a business, and as savage as it is, you know, somebody's putting in a lot of money, and if they don't see that they're going to be making money, and they just see it as a loss every year, every year, every year, it's if you lose the love that you have for the club, then your head's going to take over and go, well, I'm losing 5 million quid. I don't know how much exactly it was, but I'm losing all this money. Is this a smart decision? And obviously, when you've got things like COVID that happened and you don't know how other things are going and inflation's rose and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, to ask somebody to throw away so much money for a club that they love is, you know, people, if you lose your heart, it doesn't look like a great decision. That's why, you know, I guess at Toulon, you know, somebody like Bernard, who's the president, he's given an awful lot, and you can see how passionate he is every day being at the club, and you see how much he actually cares for the club and the city of Toulon and wants them to do well. And I guess that's where, as a player, you're like, right, I need to work. There's no excuse for me not to work hard every day. There's no excuse for me not to give my all on a match day, because I need to do this, because there's, you know, I guess one thing I have learned from this whole situation is the fact that, you know, people have spending a lot of money for me to do what I love. And when that gets taken away from you, it makes you realize, you know, I've got to take advantage of this opportunity that I've got. And I'm very grateful for, you know, for Toulon and the club to give me a contract in that tough time. And, you know, I just want to sort of repay them.
And I wonder, mate, the question that comes to my mind when you're talking through it is, yes, incredibly fortunate. You'd obviously played at a really high level and you deserve to continue playing. But the weird thing is, so did the other 50 boys that are part of the squad, right? So my question in my head goes to, like, you're now one of the lucky ones. So what happened to, of the 50 people that were part of the playing roster and academy at Wasps, at Irish, at other clubs, rumoured to be another one in financial trouble as well? Like, can you put a finger on, or do you know generally where everyone is? Like, how many of the boys found other teams, and how many had to just pack up and go and get back on the tools or do something else?
I think we had a half decent, we had a good season. You know, we only just missed out on the playoffs. So I guess that, I guess, shone everyone in a decent light that was playing. But like you say, it's savage, you know. And it's not just people getting new jobs either. It's people being in, you know, you go from being potentially a first choice at a club to a third choice. You go from second to fourth. It's, you know, there's all of these different variations within what happens. And obviously, because of the time scale of when it happened being so late in the year, a lot of clubs, you know, in the Premiership, there's salary caps. And there's a salary cap in the top 14 as well. It's just more. But, and obviously, you have the whole GIF situation in France as well. So it's not as easy to just say, like, oh, everyone will get new jobs. It's fine. Because where are these jobs? There aren't any.
And it applies to every club, right? So even they have, like, Saracens this week. So Owen Farrell, is he going to be chosen as the marquee player? Is Maro Toje going to be forced to leave? So might we see him in the top 14 next year? Like, now it's almost more than ever in the Premiership, nobody's immune. Whereas the top four teams seems to be with firmer resource, better backed and flying, which is really weird. If you listen to people speak about the Premiership, they're very down about it. You know, rugby's dwindling, attendances, for whatever reason, you've arrived in Toulon. And the top 14, you see it every single week. It is absolutely flying.
You know, rugby is huge here. We have people turn up to our training ground. I mean, the president's built an incredible training ground at Toulon. You know, it's pretty breathtaking, actually. And, you know, there's a restaurant and basically with, like, a stand that overlooks the training pitch. And, you know, we'll have, I don't know, 50 to 200 people turn up to watch a Tuesday, yeah, you know, they'll come and watch a Tuesday session, and they'll just want to be there, want to see the players, want to interact with the players, they want to just watch training and do that. So, you know, it's and you obviously I don't think there's many clubs that have that. So, you know, people here are mad for rugby, which helps. But obviously, again, you know, that's a privilege, because you know you've got to play for those people who are, you know, they're paying your wages. If we don't play well, if we don't perform, you know that you're putting the club under pressure, because less fans will turn up, less people want to be there. You know, there's more pressure on the coaches. So it's definitely, having seen what happened at London Irish, you know, you need to grow the fan base. It needs to be something that's substantial, and ultimately getting people through the gate to watch the games, to make the games exciting, to be passionate about their team is what's important. You know, and I think, you know, most games at the Stade Mayol, I think they're, you know, they're pretty much sellouts every week. And, you know, if we can keep on this sort of winning curve that we're on and get to keep pushing that top end of the table and hopefully start well in Europe, you know, I think the fans will really get behind us and pack out the stadium, and that's what you want, and you feel the passion around the team and how happy people are. Even after, you know, just this result this weekend away at Clermont, you know, people message you and see you around and turn up today at training, and, you know, they're just incredibly happy for that result and to see the team fight for a good away victory.
And obviously how you ended up at Toulon is a more roundabout way than most. It's not straightforward, but it's high profile, sort of the rules around players playing abroad and playing for their countries and that kind of thing. And as Johnny mentioned, if Maro Toje ends up going to the top 14 or someone else massively high profile from England, they might have to think again. And that's in the news at the moment, just purely from a Scottish perspective, because that's your background, your international team. Do you think it's going to benefit Scotland if, presumably, all the things you've talked about there, learning different skills, playing against different teams, such high profile players week in, week out, that has to benefit Scotland, right? And then as well, you've got younger players coming through at Glasgow and Edinburgh, so you can see that that is a good thing. I know there's a counterpoint to that, but it's got to benefit Scotland, right?
Well,
that's Johnny instead. I'll put you in a difficult position there. Johnny, it's going to benefit Scotland, isn't it?
Well, I want to see Ben playing the best level rugby that he can play. I also want, like, if you look back at Scotland now, this is a French rugby podcast. We're talking about Scotland. But like, Ali Price has just moved to Edinburgh to get more regular game time. George Horn is first choice at Glasgow. So there's two boys there. But the more you can get playing at top level clubs at an elite level at some of the world's biggest clubs, yes, that's even better. That's even to more benefit for Scottish rugby, because I always find the problem with Scottish rugby is it's small, right? There's two teams. There's only so many ideas. There's one coach or two coaches that control everything. So the more you can get out and get yourself exposed to the best players, the best coaches, the best leagues, the best atmospheres as well, from a selfish perspective, like going to the Michelin at the weekend and playing in Clermont, like that's something as a Scottish player you only got to do once every 4 or 5 years if you were lucky and part of the Champions Cup. Whereas now in top 14, you're going to Bayonne, you get to go to Clermont, you play at home in Toulon, and it's phenomenal. So like, I've always been for Scottish players leaving. As much as Scottish rugby then gives up a bit of control in terms of game time management, how boys are training, their load and stuff that they get through, I think it's great in that it opens eyes of players.
Yeah, and I think, you know, on that, like the way I see it was, I saw this as, it's an incredible club with a fantastic coaching team, with, you know, amazing board, amazing president, with an amazing squad that has everything that you want as a player. And if I can go and play there and improve as a player, then that's what's right for me. And that's only going to help me get better. And, you know, ultimately, if you're not playing for your club and you're not playing well for your club, then you'll never get the chance to play international rugby anyway, because you won't be ready for it. So, you know, like the way I saw it was, I needed to be somewhere where I was going to play, and I was going to play at a good level. And like you said, you want to compete against the best every day and every week. And that's, you know, the privilege I've got at the minute of doing that, which is yeah, you know, it's really good. I'm loving it.
And Gregor played in France as a player, right, and loved it. So I mean, he must be broadly supportive of it as well, and he must know the benefits.
Yeah, as I said, we were in camp when obviously he knew that London Irish had gone under. Obviously, I spoke to him about when I knew that Toulon was on the cards. You know, obviously asked him, you know, how did he find playing in France? What did he do you think it's a positive experience for me? Do you think it will help me in terms of Scotland or help or hinder? And, you know, he was for it. You know, I guess ultimately he wants as many Scottish players playing week in, week out, you know, around the world, doesn't he? Because it's not like England where you're not allowed to play. So, you know, you've just got to be playing well for your club, and that's what I want to do, and that's all I'm focused on, to be honest, at the minute, is playing well for Toulon, and then anything that comes on that is off the back of it, isn't it? But ultimately, I have to do well for my team and do that every week, and then, you know, opportunities will arise. And if you're not playing and you're not doing well, then they probably won't. So that's why it's important for me to go to a club with where I felt like I was going to improve as a player and be able to play well.
And so, mate, talk to us about the World Cup, because you're obviously in a tough spot from the off with the draw. Two of the biggest sides in the world, South Africa and Ireland. But can you talk us through the disappointment? Because there was a real feeling that there was a time that the Scottish set of players could do it. It was this World Cup that you could upset the odds and beat one of those big boys to get through. So how disappointing was the competition?
Yeah, it was obviously disappointing, because like anyone, you know, you train for so long. I mean, you know, a World Cup pre-season is a long time, and you spend a lot of time with the whole squad, and you know, you get quite close, and obviously your one goal for that whole period is to go deep into a World Cup and hopefully win it. So and I felt like we obviously had a good year and we were building well into it, but look, this is professional sport, isn't it? And you know, on the day, we missed a couple of chances in South Africa, Tottenham, and that is Test rugby. Like, the margins are so small. You know, you miss one opportunity to score a try and the other team takes it, and you can go from being 6-3 to 13 very quickly. And yeah, it's just, we probably weren't accurate enough at times. And didn't take our opportunities when they were there. And that cost us in those big games.
And the Irish game, to follow up, was almost crueler by nature, in that, like, huge game. That was the chance. It was set up as a final sort of make or break to go through. And then it was one way, like for 50 minutes, it was Ireland playing as they had done for the past 24 months. And almost it was cruel to watch. And I'm wondering, like, in the debrief, like, because the boys look shell-shocked. I'm there commentating in the stands, like, heartbroken for you. And I'm wondering, like, what was said immediately afterwards in the sheds, like, towards the end of that game? Like, what does Gregor come out and say, or Jamie, or whoever's getting to speak after that type of game? Like, what do you say?
It's one of these things, you know, it's really difficult. I obviously didn't play in that game. But like you say, I think when it was just a bit like, wow, God, that's, you know, it's not the way that anyone wanted it to end, obviously. It's a funny thing. Like, you know, when you've experienced, when these campaigns finish, you just sort, it's just over like that. And, you know, the next day you're kind of, you're out of the hotel and you're, you know, I was on a flight to Toulon the next day. So, yeah, it's tough because we just didn't turn up well enough at the start of the match. And that's, you know, no fault of anyone's. I think that I don't think we played particularly badly in that first half. We actually, in terms of our phase shape, we went through some good phases. We built some good attacking opportunities and we didn't take them, and Ireland punished us dramatically. Like, you know, I think they had like three line out strikes and three tries within space of, you know, the first 20 minutes, and that really probably hurt us. Well, obviously it did hurt us, you know. But like, Ireland played really well that day. You know, everything was working for them and came off, and it's obviously bitterly disappointing to end a campaign like that.
And as you say, it is very strange because normally, whether it's a defeat or a victory, you pick the bones out of it, you move forward, you're like, this is what's going to happen next week. As you say, end of a World Cup, it's like, done. Everyone goes here, there and everywhere, and you're off. But enough of that, Johnny, bringing Ben down.
I'm sorry.
Scotland chat.
I'm sorry, mate. I was heartbroken, as was everyone. Like, I'm the exact same way. Watching the game and this, I'm like, I just felt so sorry for everyone because the build-up had been so good, and the prep and the form and the knocking over big sides away from home. And that's where the belief internally for the players and for us former players and for fans was there, right? But then that's also, you talked about the nature of top-level sport, is that Scotland as a side are more than capable of creating these opportunities and finishing them. It just hurt like hell for everyone that during the pinnacle of the cycle, it didn't happen at the World Cup, but there's still a Six Nations around the corner. There's two games at home. You've got England and France at home. There's three away games, so all still to play for. So that is back on the horse. That's the next task. And I imagine you are desperate, having not been part of that game against Ireland, to get straight back in there, get amongst it.
Yeah, and obviously not playing in that game, that's why I was, you know, so keen just to I spoke to Pierre and was like, I'll get a flight the next day and straight in Monday morning to get going, because I knew, I obviously not playing, I knew that I needed to go to my club to turn up, to show how much I actually wanted to be there, you know, not just be, you know, be at Toulon and be like, oh, this is great, life's rosy, you know. It's like, no, this is, I'm going there to work hard every day, to get into the team, to try and put, you know, my mark on the team, and to play well for the club and to get wins. And that was sort of, you know, the intent that I wanted to show, and to show that I can, to play well in these matches and to get better. And then, you know, when the next opportunity comes, you know, you take it. So you do just, you have to go and go on to the next thing, because if you sit and dwell on things, it's, time flies.
It is obviously very early days at the moment, but we can see how enthused you are by the opportunity you've got there and how life has started in Toulon. So I think it's a 1-year deal initially. Can you see yourself staying in the top 14, ideally at Toulon?
Definitely. I'd love to. I'd love to stay here. Like I say, I guess, you know, the hard thing, but the beauty of a 1 year, is the fact that I know that I have to, every opportunity I get, I've got to be on the money and just enjoying it, enjoy being there, enjoying getting to know everyone, enjoying the environment, but working hard and trying to take advantage of every opportunity I get, every minute I get to play for the club. I've got to work hard and do well and try and get the results for the team. The tough thing is over 1 year is the fact that, you know, again, you're out of a contract in a couple of months, but at the same time, you've got to play for it. And, you know, I am loving playing here. I really am. I think it's a fantastic club. So, yeah, look, if they, you know, hopefully they want to extend me things, but I just have to keep working day to day and playing well. And then I'm hopefully opportunities will come. But again, that's something that I don't control. I just have to enjoy being in the minute and enjoy being here, enjoy working hard and trying to get results.
Mate, looking ahead this weekend, you got Cast at home. They're off a series of wins. They just beat Toulouse as well. Like, you've done your prep. What are you looking forward to coming up against this weekend in Cast?
They're a top side. They've got a lot, again, like every game. This is the thing though, every game in the top 14, you're talking about how big of an occasion it is, how big a match it is. And it really is. Obviously, if we can keep our momentum at home going, it's huge for the team and the club. So I think this weekend will be a really big game. Like you say, we obviously had a good win away at Clermont. They had a good win at home to Toulouse. So it's a good matchup, and I think whoever wins could, you know, we could maybe leapfrog them in the table as well. So Cast are a good side. They've got, you know, they've got a really good kicking game, and they've got a really strong forward pack. And again, these teams, and what I found a bit in the top 14 is, even if all of a sudden you're in a bit of an arm wrestle, and then somebody will do something incredible and everyone just comes alive, and next minute you're stood in your own post and you're like, how's that happened? We were under, you know, we had the game in control because there's so many brilliant players. You have to be mentally focused from minute one to 80 to get the results.
Brilliant to have you on, Ben. It's great to hear you talking so positively about life in France, especially after what happened at London Irish and with Scotland at the World Cup. And here's to you putting a smile back on Johnny's face in February as well.
No, cheers. Thank you very much for having me on. No, yeah, loving my time in France, and hopefully good things to come.
We'll get you back on when you've signed a new contract at the end of the season, Ben.
The four-year extension. We'll get on to Pierre Mignoni, get the four-year extension in the bag, and then you come back on.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Ben.
Mate, good luck this weekend. Thanks a lot, mate.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye.
He seemed genuinely enthused by rugby in France, Johnny. Not that I was expecting anything different, but it was great to hear.
He's a great boy. It's hard as well because the difficulty is Scotland World Cup, disappointment, London Irish, horrible. So it will have been a tough year for him as well, psychologically, and incredibly lucky that he's found that type of challenge, found a year contract at Toulon. And look, he's excellent. Like, he's a really, really good player. So I just hope that he keeps on pressing, picks up that game time and gets that extension, because clearly he's loving it, the experience. And also from a Scottish perspective, it's great to have him. He was previously playing at a high level in the Prem with Irish, but it's great to have him. Different challenge, but playing high level at a club like Toulon. So now, great to have him on. And here's hoping he goes from strength to strength in the comp.
And we spoke about Ben and Toulon's win at Clermont. What else caught your eye in the top 14 last weekend?
Racing winning away in their Parisian derby again, beating Stade Francais in Stu Lancaster's first derby. But I think that is potentially the seventh consecutive win that Racing have had at Jean Bouin. I think they've won seven on the bounce there. Wow. So that was impressive. Bayonne, they demolished Pau. That is the 40-64 derby down here. I'm not sure if you'll get that reference.
No.
So you got the 40 department, you got the 64 as well.
Okay, geography, I got it.
Geography, not too close. It's like, you know, a couple hours between the sides, but they demolished Pau, who have been really impressive so far at the start of the season. And mate, I enjoy watching Bayonne, mate. Pragmatic, very effective, no rock stars, hard edge them up front, well organized, and they score collective tries. Cami Lopez is also activating another. He had an option of a year extension to his contract. He's, I think, taken that up, which is great news for the club. He'll be there next season as well. So great win for Bayonne.
What about Oyonnax, Johnny?
They pummeled the Oyonnax. Like, and again, we were talking with Ben before we recorded about the beauty of the 5 o'clock kickoff in France with Canal Plus. And you see, like, they don't play the game in its entirety, but they flick between the games and they just show you action tries, and there's a little siren that goes off. And mate, it seemed like Oyonnax, the buzzer was going every 3 minutes. They absolutely smashed Lyon. They were 30-3 up at halftime. So that was huge for them. And Joel Abt, who's doing a decent job with Oyonnax. La Rochelle Bordeaux, did you watch that one?
No.
Squeaking through again. Bordeaux scored some excellent tries. Damien Penault got his first of the year. Mate, Bordeaux are going to be good. they're going to be very good. They've just got quality in every position. Like the second row is like six deep in who they can pick. They've got firepower in their midfield. They're eight. It's like they're ball carrying. They've got so much talent. La Rochelle squeaking home. Like Bordeaux were 13 points up. La Rochelle came back with a bit of scrum dominance. Perpignan, again, that's created the sort of havoc in Montpellier and generated the stories there this week. But Perpignan getting another win and Montpellier being bottom of the pile. So, mate, there's been loads of bits, loads to look forward to as well. This weekend, huge games. We talked about Toulon Cast. Toulouse Clermont, will Antoine Dupont be back at 10? Montpellier, they're home to Oyonnax. They need to pick up
gotta
points.
Win that.
Mate, they have to. They have to. Pau against Stade Francais and Racing against La Rochelle. So, mate, the games, they keep coming into the Christmas period, into the festive period. The great bit so far is that despite the conditions, we've seen loads of rain. There's been some really attractive quality rugby played. So looking forward to more of it this weekend in the top 14 and another weekend of quality action.
Absolutely. Look forward to hearing what happened in those games and how the Paw Patrol cake was next week.
Mate, Paw Patrol cake with a glass of something alcoholic. I don't know. It's going to be a good combo. Looking forward to it.
Cheers, Johnny. Big thanks to Ben White for joining us as well. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.